Welcome to episode 14 of Practical Defense, Home Security, Part 4. Welcome back to yet another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Addicks. We're getting close to finishing the series on home security, and this week we're going to look at security inside the home and some defensive protocols. Now, last time, we ended with some ideas on how to protect your identity by not broadcasting it on your mailbox, in the phone book, over the internet, and on the answering machine. This week, we'll pick up a little more on the phone protocols and then branch off into a discussion of dogs. When it comes to phones, rule one is that you are not required to ever answer the phone. And if you get a funny feeling about a call or you're busy or something, just don't answer it. Let it ring. Let the machine get it. I know there's an overriding urgency that hits all of us when that ringer goes off and we feel that we need to drop what we're doing and run over and answer it, but fight that urge. You know, nothing horrible is going to happen to you if you just let it ring. If your inner voice says don't answer, don't answer. You can always call the person back. You can also screen all of your calls and only answer the numbers that you recognize on your caller ID. I know several people who do this, and it's not only good for security, but it also filters out those really pesky telemarketers. And if you have children, please do not let them answer the phone. Period. Children are naive and can be manipulated into giving out personal information, including addresses, where they go to school, their names, how old they are, where their parents work, phone numbers, and everything else that they store in their sponge-like brains. It only takes a few lies and all will be laid bare. So please do not let your children answer the phone. The next protocol is that the man of the house is always home. He's just indisposed, can't make it to the phone at the moment, and he'll call that person back later. Now, if you're a woman alone or with children, you never want to broadcast that your boyfriend, your husband, or your father is out of the house. They are always home and just can't make it to the phone. Now, don't say why. Don't make up excuses. Just keep it simple and say generically that he can't speak right now. You know, he could be napping, could be working in the yard or in the shower, but you don't have to tell them that. You are in control of the information, and if you start making up something, it'll sound fishy. You know, just keep it simple and keep it generic. You know, most people, especially friends or business associates, will accept this, and, you know, the conversation will end pleasantly. Now, if they push for a time for a return call, just say that you can't be certain, but you will deliver the message. And if they get really pushy, then you should have some intuition alarms going off inside your head. Because why are they pushing so hard for a time? And what do you really know of this person? Remember that they called you, and you are in the position of power, so don't let this voice on the other end of the phone intimidate you or pressure you in any way. Be firm, be confident, and just end the conversation. Now, if you answer the phone and the person who called says something like, "Is the man or the woman of the house home?" That's a hang-up. You know, just hang up the phone. If you don't know whom you're calling and you're fishing for information, then I don't want to talk to you. There's one that really gets me going is when I answer the phone and the first thing the caller asks is, "Who is this?" You know, I have pretty much three responses to that. The first one is just a hang-up. You know, if you don't know who this is, I don't need to talk to you. My second response is, "I don't know, you tell me. You called here." And if I'm in a bad mood, I might say, "Well, who the bleep are you?" Remember that you have absolutely no proof that the person on the other end of the phone is who they claim to be. None. Absolutely none. They're just a voice from the ether. And this especially holds true for sales calls or charity solicitations. Now, I give money to various charities, so I get these calls all the time. Now, one of the ways that charities make money is by selling their lists of donors to other charities. It's kind of a weird roundabout system, but it's the way that it works. So I get these calls from charities doing a special drive for some event or something, you know, save the mosquito in the Amazon forest or whatever. And they're looking for a donation. And what they want is me to put a donation right now on my credit card right over the phone. So is your alarm going off? It should be. Chances are this person is, you know, who the person has my name, knows that I've given money to that particular charity in the past, and I'm probably legitimate. Sure. You know, and I have no money or have no problem using my credit card over the internet or over the phone. I do it all the time. However, the difference is, and this is a huge difference, is that I contact them. I initiate the interaction. I call the phone number or I go to the website. This voice on the other end of the phone could be anyone from anywhere in the world. And that's where I draw the line. If they call me, I do not give my credit card number to them. Never. You know, if I'm interested in helping them out, I just tell them to send me an invoice. Then, in a week or so, I get a very nice letter in the mail from the charity saying that I pledged a certain amount, and if I'd be so kind as to send them a check. You know, they get their donation, and I have kept my credit card number from being stolen. Now, another thing about phones is that your mobile phone, your cell phone, is a lifeline, and it's your number one defensive weapon. So you need to keep it close, and you need to keep it available to you. And here's a measure that I picked up from Masad Ayoub. Keep your cell phone in the bedroom at night. And there are several reasons for this. First is that if there's a power outage or a home invader cuts the power, you aren't going to be able to use your home phone unless you have an old-style, hardwired phone that goes directly into the wall by cable. And, you know, who uses those these days? And second, what if the home invader picks up another line in the house and leaves it off the hook? That will prevent you from calling out, even if you do have power. So in either of these situations, your cell phone service is not going to be interrupted. So what you need to do is get in the habit of keeping your cell phone at your bedside at night. And the easiest way to do this is to set up your mobile phone charger right there at your bedside table. You'll plug it in at night, and when you leave in the morning, pick it up on your way out. And that kind of segues nicely into the next phone topic, which is how to talk to 911 or how to talk to emergency services. So, should you ever need to call emergency for help, and I've had to call 911 in the past, you need to provide certain information to them. And I'm going to refer to the emergency numbers as 911 because that's what it's here in the United States. Now, if you live in another country or a country other than the U.S., or you travel outside your native land, you need to be certain to find out what that number is because 911 is not universal. And I bring this up because in this podcast, you know, we have over 50 countries now that download the podcast. I think actually it's like 53 by the last count. But anyway, that's unrelated to the subject at hand. When you call 911, you need to give them the following information every time. Now, the first thing you need to give them is where you are. Where are you? This is one of the most important pieces of information for a couple of reasons. Now, first, although the calling service is supposed to bring up your address, that part of the system may be offline for some reason, or it may not be available in your area, which is kind of rare in the United States now, but it does happen. So you can't assume that they know your location. So tell them. And another consideration is that the information in the system is wrong, and that's happened as well. And yes, it is rare, but it does happen. In fact, in my father-in-law's neighborhood, a fire truck went to the wrong home because they received bad directions from the system, and then they spent 20 minutes looking for the home while it burned. Now, after that, once they realized that the directions for that particular part of the neighborhood were bad, during the downtime, the fire department spent time just driving through the neighborhood and learning the neighborhood by heart until they got the system fixed. But, you know, it was really damaging to the one home because it was a 20-minute delay. Now, if it had been a heart attack or a life-threatening injury, somebody could have died. They wouldn't just have just been property damage. The other thing is that you need to think that you might be calling from your cell phone. You know, you could be anywhere in that case. You know, heck, my cell phone worked when I was in Peru in the British Virgin Islands. And if I dialed 911, I could have been, you know, speaking to some operator in Miami while I was sitting in the Andes Mountains. So, other thing, what if you're calling 911 from a hotel room? You know, certainly the hotel's address should come up on the system, but not necessarily the room number. And if you're in a Las Vegas-style hotel, there could be hundreds of rooms. So talk about finding a needle in a haystack. And, you know, another thing, office buildings. Sure, building address may come up, but which floor? Which office? Which cubicle? So you need to provide information on where you are, your address, and if you're in a building with many rooms, which room you're in, so that they can get to you as soon as possible. Next thing you need to tell them is what's happening. Now, is it a heart attack? Is it a home invader? Is it a serious life-threatening injury? You know, if the burglary is happening, if someone's in your home right then you need to be certain to tell them that it's in progress. Now, remember from last episode that when my buddy called in his burglary, it was 3 days before they sent someone to take a report. You know, if you don't tell them it's in progress, they might assume that it happened earlier and you're just calling to report it after the fact. You'll get much faster attention if they understand that the intruder is still in your home and the event is in progress. And trust me, cops love catching bad guys in the act, so they'll be there right quick. Then third, you want to tell them your name. That's just, you know, so they can talk to you, keep you calm, so they can, you know, for reporting purposes and all this other stuff. But of all the things, your name is third on the list. So where you are, what's happening, and your name. Now, a very critical thing, if you're a woman and you're alone, you have to tell them that. A woman alone in distress is a super high priority call, and you will get much faster service. It's just the way things work. You know, they have a priority list. You know, things are prioritized because, you know, there are a certain number of cops and there are a certain, you know, hundreds and hundreds of calls that come in, so things get prioritized. A woman alone in distress is a super high priority call. So if that's the situation, you need to be sure to tell them that. And you really want to permanently implant that sequence into your brain so that no matter where you are, you can give an emergency services enough information to get to you as quickly as possible. And another thing is, especially when I was talking about the priorities, you know, do not lie or exaggerate calls into the emergency services to get them to show up faster. You know, someone walking through your backyard or loitering on your front lawn, it's not going to get as fast a response as someone breaking into your home. However, you don't want to lie to emergency services and tell them that the guy is breaking in when he's not. You know, lying to emergency services will get you into big trouble, so don't do it. But if you need them, by all means, call them and tell them what's going on, and then they will send help. All right, I'll finish up this episode with a discussion of dogs. You know, I love dogs. I grew up with dogs. And dogs are a great deterrent for most criminals. But dogs are living, breathing creatures, and as such, they have their own personalities and are fallible. And as you might recall from episode 1, when I recounted the tale of when my home was burglarized and burned to the ground for evidence, we had 2 dogs, and the criminals drugged them. And so the dogs were completely taken out of the picture and really of no help. You know, I hate to say this, but, you know, the dogs could have just been shot or otherwise killed. Fortunately, I guess, considering that they were just drugged. You know, our dogs offered a level of protection, but dogs are not a complete solution unto themselves. And that's a mistake that a lot of people make. They think, I have a big dog. I don't need a gun. I don't need lights or an alarm system. The dog will take care of me. It'll chew anybody up that comes to the door. It's not the case. You should never put too much emphasis on a single security measure. You know, dogs are just one piece of a solution and not a solution unto themselves. Now, here's an example. My parents have a wonderful dog, a Dalmatian, and she is the best dog with kids that I have ever seen. She is wonderfully gentle and incredibly patient. And she's also hard of hearing and completely useless as a guard dog. I mean, my parents' cats are better at alerting to them when someone has arrived than the dog. I mean, they pick up their ears and meow minutes before the dog ever even reacts. You know, I can walk into the home and the cats will greet me at the door, but I can walk down the hallway and into my parents' bedroom before the dog will even raise her head and bark a greeting at me. You know, she's a great dog, but useless for protection. And another example, my sister keeps several dogs for home protection and hunting, and she trains them and even wins obedience competitions with them, so she really knows what she's doing. And she has a bunch of wonderful dogs. One, there's a black lab, will make more noise than a police siren and act absolutely devastatingly ferocious if a stranger approaches. The problem is, this will be from 3 feet behind you. So they've got this big, snarling, growling beast, but it's, you know, at the end of the leash and behind you. So it's like, you get him, I'll back you up. Yeah. So not all that threatening. But she also keeps a huge, sweet Doberman. Now, it's interesting. This dog will let anyone onto her property. I'm talking about the mailman, the gardener, the meter readers, whomever, you know. However, if you reach for a doorknob, you will get a gut-wrenching growl. And then if you happen to make the mistake of trying to open the door, you're going to lose a limb. Now, I give these examples to illustrate that not all dogs are cut out for security duty. It all comes down to the personality and temperament of the animal. You know, every breed is different, and every individual is different, just like people. And speaking of people, the other problem about dogs is, like human, most dogs are actually cowards. They may put on a good show and sound really scary, but they're not in it. You can ask any cop who has had to hop a fence in pursuit of a criminal or to check out some sort of suspicious behavior in the neighborhood, and you'll find that a confident presence, a sharp word, and a threatening motion will get most dogs to back right off. Now, they're not going to stop barking or growling at you, but they're going to do it from a distance. And the rest will be gone with just a bit of pepper spray or a whack on the nose with a heavy flashlight. You know, nothing to damage them, but it's just a good shock saying, hey, you know, I'm here, and I'm in control. Dog will back right off. Occasionally, there is a real protector out there, and none of that stuff is going to dissuade it. But, you know, like humans, that's probably less than 10% of the population. The other thing is that dogs, you know, they're not as smart as humans. You know, they're great, lovable creatures, and they're part of the family, but they're dumb as dogs. And here's a great personal story. My family was vacationing at Lake Tahoe. It was about 10 years ago, and my sister brought one of her dogs up, a huge, big, friendly yellow lab. He was great, great dog. And a friend of the family, one of my dad's army buddies, drove up to join us for a couple of days. And he was going to arrive late one night, so while the rest of us were out at dinner, we took a key and we stashed it for him and hid it for him and told him where it was going to be so that he could, you know, let himself in and wait inside until we returned. Now, my sister's dog was in the house, but we didn't think it was going to be a problem. You know, the dog had met this friend before, and the home wasn't ours. You know, we didn't live there. We were just staying there for a couple of days. We didn't figure it'd be much of a problem. So why would a dog, you know, defend some place that wasn't his home from someone that he had met before? Now, unfortunately, we couldn't have been more wrong. Now, our family friend was in his 60s. And when he let himself into the rental house, the 110-pound lab attacked him. Yeah, that's not what we were expecting. And for the listeners out there on the metric system, 110 pounds is 50 kilos. That's a big dog. So, fortunately, our friend was not your average 60-year-old. He was a career military and a combat veteran of both the Korean and Vietnam Wars, you know, serving on the ground in the Army infantry. And he had received 3 Purple Hearts during his multiple tours in Vietnam. He retired as a full colonel in the Army Military Police. And he was called out of retirement to serve again during Desert Storm. And one thing that always struck me about him is that when he wore his dress blues, the only emblem he wore was his combat infantry badge. You know, I asked him about it, and he said nothing else mattered to him, not even his Purple Hearts. Everything else was just fluff. The only thing that mattered to him was his emblem that said he was in combat under fire. So the good news is the dog didn't get him. Now, he was still pretty spry, and he dodged the initial attack and escaped back outside. And then it became a game for him. Well, you know, it was a game for him, but not for the dog. I mean, the 110-pound dog still wanted to rip his throat out. But it was funny. Using diversion tactics, he managed to trick the dog into a room and lock him in it. When we got home after dinner, he was relaxing on the couch with a beer in his hand with a snarling monster in the room next door. Man, was that dog pissed. Even after we got home, the dog would not accept him, and we had to keep them separated for the rest of the trip. When he came down and visited a couple of months later at our home in Los Angeles, the dog still remembered him and was still pissed and even lunged at him. And it took a lot of work and a lot of time, but the dog eventually accepted him. Now, the point of that story is to illustrate that even if the dog is hell-bent on protecting the home, they can still be outsmarted. And like everything else I brought up, dogs are really just a piece of the security system and not a single solution unto themselves. Well, that's all we have time for this episode, and we'll continue the discussion on home security next time. And the series is going a little longer than I originally expected. I figured I could probably cover the material in 2 or 3 episodes, but it looks like we might actually go as long as 6. But I do hope the information thus far has been beneficial. And if anyone in the audience has any other security tips or things that I've missed, or even things that you might disagree with that I've said, you know, I'd love to hear it. So write into podcast@alexhaddix.com and let me know. And if it's appropriate, I might even read it on the air. So, in summary, we have phone protocols. You know, you don't have to answer the phone. And you do not want to let your children answer the phone for any reason. And if you do answer the phone, the man of the house is always home. And if they called you, give out little or no information and never give out your credit card numbers. And you want to get in the habit of keeping your cell phone with you and charge it by your bedside at night so it's always with you during the night. And when you call 911, you need to tell them where you are, what's going on, and who you are. And if you're a lone woman in distress, absolutely be certain to tell them that. And we discussed dogs. You know, dogs are absolutely fantastic companions and, you know, can be very good protectors, but they're not a single solution unto themselves. They're part of the overall solution package. And just because you have a dog doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a good protector. It all comes down to the individual temperament of the dog and the personality. And before I disappear for 2 weeks, wanted to bring up that I do have courses scheduled. I actually have too many courses scheduled to list individually. I've got courses at a knife course at the end of this month. I've got 3 courses in March, and I've got another women's course at the end of April. So if you want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com, and the courses are all listed in the course schedule section. Hope to see you there. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.